go.
My manager's cool. He gets concerned. He says, Mitch, don't use liquor as a crutch. I can't use liquor as a crutch because a crutch helps me walk. Liquor severely screws up the way I walk. It ain't like a crutch. It's like a step I didn't see.
Cast. My name is Steve Miggs. Top Shelf is not with us this week. He refuses to work on Wednesdays. It's a religious thing. Don't question it. So we've got the mighty Reverend Fuego.
Good day.
And everybody's favorite, Mono Nick.
Hello.
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 Any chance to play some Mitch Hedberg? And at the time, I didn't even know that it would actually fit into the theme of this segment. And we'll get into that and the alcohol and all that craziness. But first, the jam of the week is a man who we will have on the podcast in a few minutes. It's Chris Cornell. It's his new solo record, Higher Truth, which I highly recommend. Maybe you should call it Highly Recommended by Steve. Song's my favorite one off of the record. It's called Before We Disappear. Chris Cornell, jam of the week.
Time ain't nothing if it ain't fast. Taking everything that you ever had, giving nothing in return but a cold bed in the quiet earth. If there's a door to every cell, a pearl inside of every shelter, how hard can it be to share?
Picked up this record and I knew I was, Ryan Katz, like, would you like to interview Chris Cornell? And I'm like, no, pay me. No, I was like, absolutely. And I was already listening to the record, and this is, I think, the fourth song on the record. And as soon as it started and when the drums kicked in, I was just like, oh boy. And then that chorus.
Yeah.
I'm not a guy who pays attention to words a lot, but maybe it's not a good one to play for, like, your wife, future wife, or. But
I don't know. I was kind of thinking maybe it would be.
I don't know. That's the thing. It's like it could take on, and I love songs that could be two different meanings, but like how hard would it be to spend your life with me?
Yeah, that would be like, seriously, as soon as it was playing and it was going like this right now, it's just like, this would be a good wedding song.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
And maybe it's just because I've got wedding on the brain.
Hell yeah.
There's a lot of things where I'm like, oh, that would be a good wedding song.
But some will interpret it and be like, that's beautiful. Others will be like, which one is miserable in this marriage?
Yeah, yeah.
Because then it's like, how hard would it be to rise up with me or wake up with me in the mornings? You know? And it's like, whoa. It's like, man, that could be a great breakup song or a great, this relationship.
Get together,
is
this is
going to
be
awesome.
Forever. Yeah.
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 That's what I love about Cornell and his lyrics, man. It's like, and we talk a little bit about it in the interview, and I bring up this song, and it was kind of cool. His reaction was very like, I'm glad that you paid attention, kind of a moment. And I always love those moments when we do interviews with artists, and they realize that, I don't know, I didn't do my homework, but like I gave a crap.
Yeah, at least you paid enough attention to the stuff that they're putting out there right now.
Right.
And it's not just, oh, so who did you bang this time? Or, right. You know, the TMZ crap. You're actually paying attention to their art.
Yeah, and that's the part that I always enjoy. And it was funny, you know, the whole backstory. So they're like, okay, well, you could be there at 7 o'clock at Benaroya Hall to do this interview. And it was a reason why we didn't do the podcast yesterday. I'll probably spend more time on the MegaCast talking about this just because we're slow. I don't have much time today.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything else to talk about on the MegaCast, so I need something. But I got to do a really cool event at Joint Base Lewis McChord. They asked a few of us, former Seahawks and myself, which was kind of awesome. I got lumped in with like Joe Tafoya, Jordan Babineau, Norm Johnson, a few other guys
Norm.
As well. Yeah, dude. Got to watch Norm shoot some rifles, which was cool.
Whoa.
But they're like, hey, could you come down to Joint Base Lewis McChord? We're doing this thing where we want to help raise the spirits of some of the soldiers, especially the ones that are suffering from PTSD.
Oh, and I was dude, like, that is amazing.
Like, yeah, 100%.
What an honor.
It was. And Reggie Jones, for those of you New Orleans Saints fans, he was on the Super Bowl winning team. He gave a speech that just, like, he even set it off by saying, I'm sure you guys are thinking, why should I be speaking in front of you guys? What have I done in my life that would be relatable to you? And he shared an insanely powerful story about walking in on his mom shooting his dad.
Whoa.
And he's like, you know, granted, I'm not in the military, but I grew up on a military base, actually, JBLM,
because
he's from Kent. And he's like, you know, my life went down a crazy spiral because I lost both of my parents. One, I lost in a very serious, like in a forever way. And the other one went to jail.
Yeah.
And I had a choice of either breaking that cycle and changing my world. And it has such a great piece of information, just like, you know, life is full of hurdles, but that's what they are. They're meant to be jumped over and move forward. And it was just like, he's speaking, and I know he's speaking for the military, but man, as a human being, I'm like sitting there and I'm tracking, I'm feeling what he's saying. So it was, and again, like, they brought us there to help build their morale. And I swear 100% confidence that everybody you asked that went there, it was the other way around. Being around those guys built our morale. They were so appreciative, so cool. I met a lot of great rockaholics, guys that listen to the show, listen to the podcast, and it was an amazing experience. And that's why I wasn't able to do the podcast yesterday. And then right after that, I got done around like 5, hightailed it to Seattle, and was like, oh man, getting to interview Chris Cornell at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
I was like, and I had stuff in my head, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to a bar before the interview and map out what I want to say.
Oh, I was going to say, get a little liquid courage and unnerve yourself.
You know, oddly enough, though, I wasn't planning on it, but then Castle shows up and a couple of shots.
Yeah, well, that's
a couple of porters.
Yeah, that's just Castle being an enabler there.
Yeah, so I mean, I wasn't drunk, but I definitely was loosened up before the interview. Mm-hmm. But while I was waiting by myself and I ate some dinner and I'm sitting at the bar, I grabbed the coaster and was writing my notes on the coaster. And we were all, Castle's dying. He's like, you have to show that to Chris Cornell. So
that's
you'll hear
amazing.
It in the interview when it starts off. But I get over there and I'm like, you know, I'm nervous. I meet a security guard. His security guard was great. This big, just scary dude. But I found out he's from New Jersey. He's a Devils fan.
Oh, there you go, bro-ing down.
He's also a Nets fan. I said, hey, my first autograph ever was Chocolate Thunder Daryl Dawkins. And he looks at me and goes, bro, that's my cousin. I'm like, what?
Wow.
It's like, I used to play ball with him all the time. I'm like, are you kidding me? So he loved me after that because, like, you know, he's like, that's so crazy that you are a fan of Daryl Dawkins. I'm like, he was my favorite basketball player as a kid. Mainly because he was the only guy I ever had an autograph of. So, of course, I'm going to love the guy. Interview goes, I go in there, and the interview, it was so nerve-wracking because you just walk into this dressing room, and it's just Chris Cornell, the set list, and a guitar, and he's just working out stuff.
Oh,
and I'm
man.
Like,
yeah, how do you even broach that situation? I mean, he knows that you're showing up to do
right.
this interview, but
you
you're
hope
like,
he knows.
Hi, I'm
you walk in, he's like, I don't have anyone planned on coming in here, but oh God, God.
It was very overwhelming because I'm like nervous as it is. Also, I'm like, crap, man, I maybe shouldn't have had 2 shots before I made my way down here.
Or the porters.
Leaving that out. That's part of my dinner, man. So I'm like, oh, what am I going to do? And I'm like, I almost wanted to apologize. Like, I'm sorry I'm in here. But, man, Cornell is not like Mr. Hey, come in. Let's cut it up and be funny.
He's typical Seattle, like standoffish. Like, no. I'll let you come in, but I'm going to be kind of like pierce your eyes. Or...
For a second.
Yeah.
But the minute you get in there and the minute before, he could not be more welcoming without being like
overboard.
Yeah, so he's not like a big old bro hug, but he's sitting there right. And it's you're suddenly put at ease.
You felt like you were in a real moment. Like
okay, yeah.
I don't think I could describe Cornell any other way than being just real. He's not going to go out of his way to play a game and be a character for you.
That's cool.
But he's also not going to go out of his way to be too cool for school.
Right.
He's just going to be probably no different than it would be if I met him at a bar. And I wasn't writing notes on a coaster, and I was just having a conversation with him. It was that kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to kind of preface that. It was a lot of fun. And originally they said, hey, you only have a couple of minutes with the guy. And the management told me that. Everybody told me that. 15 minutes later, and they're finally like, all right, you got to get going. And as I'm leaving, I'm like, I get why they were wrapping it up. Who's waiting outside for me to be done with my interview? Jeff Amen from Pearl Jam.
Nice.
So the security guard's escorting me out, and Jeff's like, hey, man, that was fun playing football. And the guy's like, you played football? I'm like, yeah, we played football on CenturyLink Field. No big deal. That's just what we do.
Man.
These guys know me, man.
Yeah, right?
Dude, it's all like, interviewing Chris Cornell. Jeff Ament remembers me. Like, these are not things that ever I thought would ever happen in my life.
And you've done some cool things. You've been around in Seattle and done radio here for 17, 18 years?
Since late 97, yeah.
So, yeah, you've been doing it for a long enough time where you've had those experiences, and it's so cool to actually see you just totally geeking out about this stuff still.
If you look at, and some people pointed out on the picture I posted on KSW's Facebook page, like, you look like a giddy schoolgirl. And my only response was, yes, I was a giddy schoolgirl. Because I'm always excited to meet Chris, or talk to Chris Cornell, but I was so pumped that the interview went well. Like, it was.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Why don't we just do it? The show was amazing. He played songs from all of the bands he's ever been a part of and more. He solo stuff, Temple of the Dog, Soundgarden, Audioslave, even did Mad Season's River of Deceit, which was amazing.
Whoa.
Posted the full video on KSW's Facebook page. Covered Dylan.
It's worth a watch.
Did Thank You. Yeah, dude. I sent it to Craig Gash. He's like, did you know that's my favorite song of all time? I'm like, no, but I figured you'd like it because your buddy's with McCree.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's cool.
And he's like, did you record the Temple of the Dog song too? I'm like, actually, I did. And I usually record like a minute video.
Yeah.
Those are the first two times where I've actually recorded the full song because I was like, this is too special not to share it with everybody.
Yeah. You had great seats too, bro.
Dude, we were
looking at the location of these videos. I can't play the videos on this computer, but just like, wow, yeah, you are close.
We were one row back and over from, and I'm not kidding you, sitting pretty much right in front of us was Stone Gossard, Jeff Ament, and Matt Cameron all together. Jeez. Behind them was Kim Thayil, and a little bit over was Barrett Martin from Screaming Trees.
Wow.
And I guess Ben Shepherd was there too. I didn't see him, but it was
hard not to notice him, man. He's like gigantic.
I know, but it was dark. But it was so like, it was such a Seattle thing, and it confirmed I've always had this opinion that Chris Cornell is kind of the glue of that scene. He kind of brought everybody together. You watch Pearl Jam's 20, you realize how important he was to Pearl Jam.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. And it was very evident by the love that those guys showed by A, showing up, and B, they were standing up and giving standing ovations just like everybody else, like the rest of us. They were not acting like they were better than anybody. Not that they ever do, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Like, they weren't acting like they were too cool either.
No. They were enjoying it, and it was just like, man, Chris Cornell is a special individual. I know I'm going a little gaga over him, but
dude,
he is.
One of the most influential concerts I think I ever went to was Mercer Arena Soundgarden. They had to cancel it, postpone it, and then 2 weeks later they did it. But he broke down, and he did a solo version, acoustic version of Black Hole Sun.
Uh-huh.
And it was just the most, it was so insane. It was just like, wow. And then we got a chance to go to the speakeasy a couple years back with him and Ben. And it was that same thing. It's just,
oh, yeah, the Manor Palace place. Yeah. Whatever. Astor Manor. Whatever.
Yeah.
the place that was fancy.
Yeah, the place that had the whole venue behind the bookshelf.
Yes.
But seeing him live and just doing acoustic stuff, it's so amazing. It just really is.
And then those two songs, Hunger Strike and River of the Sea, Mike McCready was up there playing guitar with him.
Jeez.
To add to the amazing moment.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of videos on the KSW page too, or on the Facebook page, so man.
He did a cover of Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor, did Thank You by Led Zeppelin.
I've heard that cover done before too, and he rocks it, man.
He does, man. Yeah. Everything about it was amazing. So why don't we listen to Chris Cornell, myself and him hanging out backstage in his little green room, honestly, like about an hour before he took the stage. It's a lot of fun. So here's Chris Cornell. on the Migscast. We are backstage hanging out with Chris Cornell. Hello, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. I don't want you to get thrown off. I wrote my notes on a beer coaster, but that doesn't mean I was boozing. Okay.
I was just distracted by your tattoos anyway.
Okay. Any of them that are sticking out for you? Or?
I don't know. The first thing I saw was like the simplest one that's just the circle with little lines on it. You know?
That was my old band's logo. It was a halo.
Uh-huh. I guess it looks kind of cool to see the primitive looking thing in the middle of what looks like someone like had a lot of years of experience and expertise to pull off.
Yeah.
What is that? Because I see the sort of legs and high heels. Is that Ziggy Stardust or something?
It is a
coffee.
Or is it just...
It's a girl playing a tambourine.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It represents playing the drums for me. I know you played drums for many, many years. And yeah, so that was like my really not so subtle way of showing love towards what I love to do is play the drums.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Cool.
Do you have any tattoos?
I have one, but it's sort of hard to get to. Can't really show it now. It's here.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you can. You could be like, I remember one time I was at a PetSmart and a guy saw all my tattoos. And I don't know if you had that happen where someone sees your tattoo and like, let me show you my tattoos.
That hasn't happened to me really because I only have one and it's usually covered.
Well, you can, you know, rock the tank top. You never know.
Yeah. Then they might go, I like your tank top. You know, I look at my tank top.
Well, the guy took his...
We like each other. We wear tank tops and... Yeah, I know.
The guy took his shirt off in the middle of PetSmart. It was very awkward and it was an awful tattoo. And I had to just look at it and I'm like, nice job, buddy.
Do you ever watch, like, the tattoo TV show?
I've watched a bunch of them. Like, the ones where they, like, fix up the tattoos and the one with Dave Navarro.
The one I'm talking about is the one with Dave Navarro like, it started out, it was, you know, it was... kinder, and now like the last couple times I've seen it, it's the whole show is basically them just ripping into the tattoo artists, and all that's fine, and it's sort of a contest, and it's kind of, I guess, a high stakes contest, but what ends up happening is you've got like the person that just got their tattoo sitting there listening to tattoo judges tell the guy that just gave them the tattoo how awful it is,
right?
Which is seems kind of funny. I mean, I guess it's for...
But it's a permanent piece of art, and it's like, I get it, you got a free tattoo, but you want it to be good.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants a tattoo for free if they regret it. It actually costs money to remove it, so...
Like, and it's super painful.
Yeah, maybe they could do like a TV show where it's you get your tattoo removed for free, and then they judge how well the removal goes.
I have a buddy, my tattoo artist, Tony Mitchell, and he is getting tattoos removed from his arm so he can... get a blank slate and start over again, which I thought, I give you all the respect in the world because it seems like you're going to go through a lot of pain just to add new art to your body.
Yeah, you could probably just get, like, you know, boutique t-shirts or, like, you know, get long sleeve white shirts and just write cool stuff on them, and then you can do that all the time as long as you live and just...
And just change it out depending on your mood, yeah.
Yeah. Because you can't... The argument for sort of somewhat permanence for a tattoo is that goes away if you're someone that goes and gets them removed.
Right.
So it's like, how much does it really mean to you if the last round just got removed?
100%. Yeah, good or bad. Every tattoo for me. And what does your tattoo mean to you?
Well, this tattoo is like an ode to love, for love to my wife Vicky. And so, and it's around the time that I married her, and I remember like driving in the car and thinking about what it would look like, and having to ask her how to spell forever in Greek letters in Greek, and then hoping that that was actually right. And,
yeah, you don't want that angry tattoo artist that writes like, you know, he writes hamburger instead or something.
I just wanted to make sure it was right, and then taking something that I drew that I liked and then giving it to someone I had never met before to put on my arm was a little bit, whoa. Like that experience was a little bit...
Were you guys married when you got the tattoo, or was it before you guys got married?
It was before we got married.
Were you at all nervous? Because I have a tattoo, this silhouette of, that's my wife right there. And I did it before we got married, but I knew I was proposing to her.
Oh, you were afraid maybe she would dump you, or maybe she would say no, or...
I thought maybe she might not like this.
No, that never... I never thought that. I was really worried that she wouldn't like it. I don't know. I didn't have those worries. My worry, and this is the thing about it, is that I think with tattoos, it's got to be something that means something to you, obviously, but it also has to be like who's putting it on you, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of factors involved, like because it becomes a permanent
Absolutely.
Thing. Yeah. It's like I don't want to be a peachy for somebody who I've never met before to like doodle on,
yeah,
and then be stuck with that.
I always find myself becoming good friends with the tattoo artist. I think it's just, and then wind up wanting to stick with them for that reason, because it's like, okay, I've built a bond with them, so I know that they're not going to do me wrong.
Well, yeah, and if it's not someone that you can build a bond with, they probably shouldn't be putting things on your arms.
Any thoughts of wanting to get another? I love how we haven't even had a chance yet to talk about your CD.
I'm doing the best I can to
avoid it.
To burn up our time so that you never touch on anything that was on that coaster that you just showed me.
But the coaster's awesome. I've got great notes on it. I don't even need to look at them because A, Higher Truth, I love the timeless feel to that record. It feels like as if like there's a warmth to it, and I think it's maybe just because there's some unique instrumentation that's going on there, and mm-hmm. and just the way that the production is. I just love the overall vibe of the record. And before we disappear, the first time I heard that song, and I still listen to that song, every time I listen to it, it stops me in my tracks. And I'm like, it forces me to pay attention to what you are saying, okay. which I really enjoy. But I don't know if it's...
That's the goal, I think. You know? Seriously. And there's... I take it seriously. So, you know, there's that moment of feeling like, okay, I believe this is finished, the song is written,
yeah.
and now the song is demoed, and maybe I learned something from the demo, and maybe I don't know, but at the end of the day, what makes me feel great is hearing really someone say something like what you just said, because that means that, okay, I'm not out of touch entirely with reality.
Right.
There might be a lot of people that don't agree with you,
sure.
but at least I know that there's one person sitting here that has got the effect from the song that I was hoping would be the effect of the song, and which means I'm not entirely, insane. I kind of, in a sense, know that when I feel it, when I hear it, someone else will feel it or hear it. And I think that can be a problem with personal songs sometimes, because what might move me, for example, when I'm playing and singing the song, might move me because it's I have a personal relationship to it. You know, I have imagery that's coming in, and while I'm playing it, while I'm singing it, and it's, you know, and I'm feeling like, wow, this is really this is an emotional song. This is great. Someone else might not get that because they don't have that relationship to it. So the point, I think, is that one human can kind of create that and create a song or whatever it is, a poem, a painting, whatever, that stirs something in them, and someone else essentially will be stirred by it too. Not by my story, but sort of it's somehow evoking images or feelings in them and allowing them to kind of feel something in their story. And that if you can't do that, then I think you're screwed.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I never even thought. I've never been a songwriter, and I never thought about the pressure of throwing out something there for the masses to hear. And if they don't connect with it, how that would feel internally for someone like yourself. I mean, it's got to be a weird feeling to think, okay, I hope they're going to connect with this song or this record, uh-huh. But I don't know. And you don't know until it's out there for people to hear. And is it too late at that point, or is it not? I mean, you don't know until, you know what I mean?
Well, what I think is important for any buddies to be able to communicate, you know, and get their feelings across. And so if you're a songwriter, for example, that's one way that you're doing it. And to know that you are communicating is very satisfying, because you never know. You know, I've been in that position before where I felt like a song was working in a way that I thought would be easily communicated, and then after a while I realized that it didn't really work that way. It wasn't doing that, and then wondering, well, why? Where did I go wrong here? And that's the part, I guess, that's challenging about music.
Has there been a song that you could think of offhand that you were just kind of surprised that didn't connect with people in the way that you hoped?
Most of those were songs, if not all those were songs that didn't get released. You know.
Gotcha.
you run it through the filter, maybe a wife or a friend or someone, and say, maybe that one should stay for like the B-sides collection.
Yeah, or it would actually, I would react differently to it, you know, like every other time. Mm-hmm. There, it's a strange thing to do, especially, you know, doing it for a living, where you have this other component of it too, which is like there's a business side to it. There's a
How do you keep the expectations kind of out of your head, you know, from whether it be fans, whether it be from management, whether it be from labels or whoever it may be? Because, I mean, it feels like when I hear your music, it doesn't feel like you're being tied down by anyone else's expectations. It's you and it's pure. And that's what I always loved about whether it be Soundgarden, whether it be Audioslave, whether it be Chris Cornell as a solo entity. It always feels like, you know, there is, it's a silly term, but people say that zero F's given. But I feel like that's kind of your vibe. Like, you just do what you do. And is it hard for you to do that with other people, other factors breathing down your neck?
I personally, like, sort of firmly believe that, especially with commercial success, if that's your aim, as a songwriter, I think you have to sort of get in that lane early on, and stay there, because there's a whole bunch of stuff I think you got to work out, and I never worked any of that out. I never felt like, and I saw this with a lot of bands. I always felt like if most of the people that came sort of up with me and kind of came out of the world that I came out of and my band came out of, if they seemed to try to write for commercial success, it probably had less commercial appeal somehow. Like and I always felt that way with me. I felt like I can write 10 songs, and if something, if one of those 10 songs somehow has a broader appeal, it's an accident. But it's going to happen. That accident will happen occasionally. Right. And I'm not necessarily the best judge of it. I don't feel particularly in touch with the commercial side of music as a fan. And I never was. I was always someone, even from as early as 8 years old, I can remember, I was someone that sort of liked the deeper album tracks and didn't, yeah. And I liked the songs that I didn't hear on the radio, the songs that my friends hadn't heard. Maybe just, I'm not sure why, there was a different sort of approach to it, possibly, not so much as writing it, but maybe producing it. Maybe the artist or the producer or the label felt like, you know, that's not a song we're going to have a hit with. So we'll put that as the ninth song on your album, right, or something. Right. And maybe what went into making that song is something that appealed to me, that is why I like music. That's different than I suppose what makes commercial music. I'm not really sure. But the short version of the answer is that I always felt like I will do my best as a songwriter and an album recorder if I don't consider any of that, and I will have probably a better chance at having popular songs if I don't do that.
You don't put that pressure on you. Yeah, I get you.
Not even pressure. It's more of a. It's not pressure. It's a focus, and I can't say that it's an artistic focus. It's more of a manufacturing thing. It's like. Like, if you imagine what's one of your favorite classic bands since you were a little kid?
For me, probably, I'd have to go with Kiss.
Okay.
I mean, it's the first, you know, Kiss and then Guns N' Roses, but Kiss really defined my love for rock music.
Now, imagine you're a little kid and Kiss is coming out with a new album and someone tells you, yeah, they were sitting around and they were writing this album and they were trying to figure out what you would want. Mm. Now, if for me, for example, say it's a Pink Floyd record or something. If I believed that they were just sitting around scratching their heads trying to figure out what me, this teenage kid in Seattle, wanted to hear, I would never want to listen to that record. I wanted to be invited into their world, into their universe, whatever it is. It didn't have anything to do with me. I was trying to escape me by listening to their music.
Right.
And I think someone that writes commercial songs specifically for commercial success and to have big hits, the ones that do it consistently, I mean, it's bravo. It's an amazing thing that they're somehow able to do that, because it's a mystery, but it's a different thing. Mm-hmm. It's like marketing. It's like a marketing genius.
One last question. I know I got to let you go. I wanted to ask you because I'm a huge Soundgarden fan as well, and I always love when my favorite bands kind of go off and do their own thing outside of the band because I feel like it. And maybe this is just me, but it's like, oh, this will make them miss their band more. You know what I mean? And they maybe get more excited to get back in the practice space and recording. Do you find that like the solo stuff give you an opportunity to get away and refresh yourself? And then do you get excited to get back with the boys again, or how does that work in your world?
I think it's with what I do as a solo entity, I'm always kind of bouncing back and forth, and it always feels refreshing both ways all the time.
That's a good point.
And I think that's a good thing. I think I think that in a sense you sort of go out into the world and then you come back, and it's sort of two different worlds where you can kind of bring some aspects from one into the other and cross those back and forth all the time. And I also think that there's something healthy in the trust of a band, for example, allowing each other to do that and supporting each other when they do that. I think that creates a really sort of strong core relationship thing that you bring back into your band, and it makes you sort of believe in you guys even more.
Absolutely, yeah.
Chris, I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much. And Higher Truth, great record. And I'm looking forward to seeing you perform live at Benaroya Hall.
Right on. Thank you.
Ooh, techno. The perfect one to play right after Soundgarden's Chris Cornell.
Get your hands up, people!
You've got mail.
The Meg's guest emails, douches.
Love it. Oh, dude, I was talking about the song that I fell in love with.
Don't forget about
before
that.
Before We Disappear. He started the set with that song, too, man.
Oh, that's so cool.
Oh, it was like, I'm so glad I got here on time.
Yeah, that was, I was like, he's like, he made the list for you, man.
He did. Granted, I did see it on the set list before we even started talking, but it was, and we'll get video up in the near future of that interview. Vicky filmed it, so it was a lot of fun.
Oh, she even got to go. Sweet.
Yeah! Yeah, it was fun seeing Vicky. She was having a good time. It's always fun seeing any of us outside of our workplace because it's a little bit looser.
Yeah.
People are less stressed. Even doing an interview like that, it was such a casual, easy thing to do.
That is great.
Rev, in your hands, what do you want to do?
Let's do emails.
Emails. All right, we've got a couple. And actually, we got, speaking of our intros and our music stuff, Ziggy just chimed in with a brand new MiggsCast Messages intro. He goes, hey guys, long ago I did a Judas Priest bump for a certain Mr. Shelf. Today, it's something new. I hope it doesn't blaspheme Toppy. Well, it won't because he's not here.
Yeah, screw that guy.
Expect more soon and enjoy. So here is the MiggsCast Up the Irons. That's what he's calling it. Do we got it?
I don't see it on this drive.
Oh, son of a bitch. I must have forgot to put it
there. I see V1, V2, and then just a bunch of...
You know what? Next week.
Okay.
We'll save it for Top Shelf.
Top Shelf can appreciate it.
Yeah, well, that would be rude of us to play it anyway.
That's appointment listening right there.
That's right. That's a tease. Tune in next week for our Ziggy intro. Next week, I think we're back on... Oh, it's going to be a short one. I'm sorry. I just got so many damn meetings, and I have no control over this right now. So next week will be another short MiggsCast, but I believe after that, we're back into the rhythm of things.
Nice.
Let's hope. Trust me, it kills me that I can't keep Tuesdays completely free, but sometimes I have no choice. Next one. This one's subject, your favorite girl. It's from John from Truth or Consequences, New Mexico.
Sweet. That's where Cactus Jack is from.
That's right. Mankind. There's our wrestling quota.
There you go.
He goes, simple question for the four of you on the next MiggsCast, or the three.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think is the hottest? Ayla the cam girl, Rachel Barley the bikini barista, or, and I'm sure you could do the math, Red the stripper?
Oh, man. For me, I'd have to say Red, because I just think her confidence and just being in the room with her confidence is just insane. I haven't met Rachel, so I have no idea.
You weren't here for when Rachel came in?
I don't think I was.
I feel like
I thought
you
he was.
You were here.
Maybe I wasn't. I've just forgotten.
I swear he was here.
Yeah, you know what? I must have been.
She came in regular clothes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I don't remember.
Remember when we went and played with the puppies? Oh, I mean, yeah. Actual animals. Yeah, not yeah,
yeah.
Her puppies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what? I do remember that, but I'm still going to have to say red.
Nick?
Boy, this is a tough one.
I mean, we could do a round of F, Mary, Kill. I mean, it feels like in this situation.
Yeah.
Not that we need to, but.
For the way that I've progressed in my life and matured, I'll go with Ayla the Cam Girl.
Oh,
you want to matured.
Rock the accordion as your
sure. Yeah.
Damn,
I like you know something that's a little bit more like obtainable.
Yes,
yes.
I feel like Toppy would hands down go with Rachel.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
He's obsessed with her.
Yeah. Yeah, the way that he that's the only one that he just is like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go down to check out her coffee stand.
Right.
He's gonna make a trek down there. He's invested in Rachel.
I'm trying to figure.
He lives like 5 minutes from there, and he still hasn't gone. I'm like, come on, Toppy. It's
but
not
he said
that
it
difficult.
At least he hasn't even said that he would go and visit
anyone
else.
I've driven by the damn place more times than he has, and I live in Seattle.
Did you get a coffee?
It talks a big game.
I did not, but I tried to look through the window every time, but the shutters are always closed.
You ever get into an accident or close to getting into an accident because you're trying to check out? Me neither.
Peeking?
Never at all.
Not,
especially not at that hot chick-a-latte when I'm Meridian. Never.
No.
Man, I'm torn. It's like picking your favorite kid.
Totally, yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm going to have to get into a devil's threesome with the Rev. I'm picking Red.
Nice.
I'm a fan of Red as a person. I think she's and she got me flowers.
She did. Yes, I think that would. Right. And you can even just be like to the other girls if they got mad. You'd be like, she got me flowers.
And coming in without a bra, that was pretty hot.
That was pretty awesome, dude. I'm
actually, it was pretty cold, sir. It was very, very cold.
I'm glad it wasn't.
Well
hot.
Played.
Man, I'm torn though. That's a tough one. It depends on the day, but
they're
man.
All awesome. They've all been super fun. Not that I remember Rachel was on the podcast, but yes,
I know
they were all great. On the podcast.
They were all fun. I was here for that. All right, that is all of our emails.
It's the mix test. Nick.
Voicemail.
All right, hopefully we can get to them. Let's do at least one.
Hola, deuces. It's Carmack.
You are
calling with Steve a happy early birthday.
Thank you. And to you,
love
too.
Love to make it out to the game, but I'll be going out that Saturday to celebrate my birthday, which is October 4th.
I know that.
Oh, nice.
Steve. Anyways, I'll be at the Tulane Casino, the Canoes Cabaret. Any deuces can't make it to the game, want to go there, find me.
Fine.
Yeah, you know he'll be having a great time. Happy early birthday, Carmack.
Yeah, we look forward to your voicemails next week. Next voicemail. Yeah, we should probably not play this one.
Yeah. Where did that come from?
Yeah, just
just playing through all of them.
Just put a bleep on it.
All right.
You know, there's a guy who listens to our podcast who apparently hasn't been home.
Weird.
I got to call her. His mom just for those that we bleeped it because out of respect, but that's weird, man. I'm gonna have to get that number and give her a ring and let her know.
Hopefully
that
it was just a road trip.
I hope he's okay. I feel bad. I don't check the voicemails until the day of.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, why don't we do Facebook drama? Because we got to get out of here.
Wow,
that was very awkward. I'll keep you posted.
Hola.
Yeah. Right.
Señores, señoritas.
Can we just shorten this? Because I got like a minute. We got to do it. Sorry, I got to go to a meeting. All right, playing the role. Facebook drama. Our chance to point out the stupidity that happens on Facebook. Sorry, boys. You know what? Only because of the name, Nick, you will play the role of Angie.
I figured.
Rev, you will be Cindy, and I will be Grace. Take it away, Angie.
All right. Wow, you want to run around calling me a whore, Cindy? I'm not the one who begged me for a pregnancy test last year.
Seriously, delete this. I have so much fudging dirt on you, you don't even want to go there.
Like what? Tell me everything about your Planned Parenthood visits. Sure, your family would love to know.
Are we doing this right now? Okay, fine, you stupid B-hatch. How about when you and Jason hooked up at your brother's 12th birthday party and I guarded the pantry door?
How about when you hid weed in your to get it into the prom?
Is this really necessary? You guys are my friends.
Oh, and Cindy, let's talk about your electric toothbrush and how friendly you are with it.
And you gave John his first noggin at your dad's house.
You wear two bras to make your boobs look big.
Ugh, girls, you need to stop. This doesn't belong here. Hashtag damage control.
And Angie puts the first four letters in control.
And whoa. Cindy can't spell hashtag functional idiot.
And you flash your boobs to avoid paying at the toll booth.
Angie, stop upsetting Cindy. You know she has problems.
I don't care. You're her mother. You handle her problems. She only comes to me when she needs a pregnancy test or a ride to Planned Parenthood. Hashtag almost mama drama.
Wow.
I respect that they self-censored themselves. Fudging.
Fudging.
That was nice. For the kids.
And B-hatch.
B-hatch. And a noggin.
Wow.
All right. Hey, huge thanks to Chris Cornell for hanging out with us on the Mixcast. I'm still a little thrown off by that voicemail.
Yeah.
I hope everything's okay. Wow. So we'll figure that out. But hey, thank you guys for listening for Top Shelf Refuses to Work on Wednesdays. The Rev, Mono Nick. My name is Steve Miggs. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being patient. And, oh, thank you to Jacob in Kirkland. He texted us and said he voted for us on the Best of Western Washington. You guys are in first place over Luke Burpstank.
Nice.
For now.
Keep Burpstank. It up. Keep voting. Let's take down Burbank.
Yeah.
Hashtag beat Burbank.
Titanic style.
Yes. Absolutely. All right. Stay positive and suck it.